listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
I must begin these very brief remarks by thanking God for delivering me to this point in my professional journey.
Does the meaning of the phrase woman mean anything anymore? And the supreme irony here is that President Biden said he was only going to appoint an African-American woman to the Supreme Court. Well, what did that actually mean?
But when you look at a decision like Roe, it has not promoted judicial consistency, but rather judicial instability.
The only thing for us as Christians that brings restoration into our lives is something that the humanist does not know, and that is forgiveness of sins.
This is Ezra from Louisville, Kentucky.
This is Ezra from Louisville, Kentucky.
And my mom loves Issues, etc.
And my mom loves Issues, etc.
Well, follow the money, they say. Government money usually goes to promote the best interests of, well, they say the people, most people know it's the government or those in power. What about government money that funds education? It goes to public schools. It sometimes, but not always, goes to private schools and even religious schools. There is a case before the Supreme Court. They've heard the arguments. They're ready to announce a verdict soon. Out of the state of Maine, involving public funds for Maine's religious schools, what will the impact of that decision be outside of Maine in the rest of the United States? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 7th of April. We'll be talking about that Supreme Court case with Andrea Pachotti Bayer. She has written recently for Newsweek, the Supreme Court can end a century of anti-religion discrimination. Dr. Michael New of the Charlotte Lozier Institute joins us after that to discuss a new Wall Street Journal poll on 15-week abortion bans. It's part 15 of our series on the St. Peter option, talking about popular culture versus the life of the church with Pastor Peter Bender of the Concordia Catechetical Academy, then Tim Gagline, Vice President of Government and External Relations at Focus on the Family, will be alongside to discuss church attendance and the loss of community. Joining us to discuss a Supreme Court case involving public funds for Maine religious schools, Andrea Pachotti Bayer. She's director of the Conscience Project. She's a Stanford-educated lawyer, formerly served on the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice, and she's author of a recent column for Newsweek, The Supreme Court Can End a Century of Anti-Religion Discrimination. Andrea, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you so much for having me, Todd.
Tell us about this 1981 Maine law that restricted state money to religious schools.
Well, it's a very interesting law, but it's important to go a century before then. Maine has a number of rural areas where they don't have a public high school, and they have a program in place for kids that are in these rural areas to get basically a voucher to be able to go to the school of their choice. It may be a nearby public school, or it may be a private school. And that had been chugging along from a great way for a long time to help the students to be able to learn and help their families. But in 1980, the state's attorney general thought that there was a religious freedom issue, an establishment clause issue under the First Amendment, if those funds, those vouchers, went to sectarian schools. And sectarians, they defined as schools that really are not religious in name only, but they have education through the lens of the faith tradition of the school. And the Maine legislature passed a law that would basically put together this rule that would block the use of vouchers by families, by students, to schools if the schools they chose were ones that have that sectarian identity.
What is a Blaine Amendment?
You know, Todd, that's a great question. Interestingly, the sectarian rule that I mentioned in Maine is not a Blaine Amendment, but it has a lot of Blaine flavor to it. James G. Blaine was a congressman from the state of Maine who in the late 1800s wanted to become president and make a name for himself by taking advantage of anti-Catholic fervor and bigotry at the time. Our public schools were predominantly Protestant, and with an influx of Catholic immigrants, there was fear, mistaken fear, of allegiance between Catholics to our state authority and to their spiritual authority, the Pope. And so there were efforts to stop public funds from going to Catholic-run schools. And so the Blaine Amendments, James G. Blaine tried to amend our U.S. Constitution with an amendment. It failed, but several states adopted their own state Blaine Amendments and basically prevented the flow of public funds to religious schools. They again used that word sectarian, and at the time, that was code for Catholic.
So how is this law in Maine being challenged?
So it's being challenged by two scrappy families, the Carsons and the Nelsons. These are Christian families who live in rural areas that are benefit from these voucher programs. They wanted to send their children to Christian schools. The Carsons wanted to send their daughter to the school that they went to in Bangor, I believe. And it's very cute, kind of nice human touch. They're high school sweethearts, the Carsons. And they were told that their school of choice for their daughter fell within the sectarian exclusion. And so they wouldn't be able to use the voucher for that school. They sent their daughter and made incredible financial sacrifice. But they realized, along with this other family, the Nelsons, who similarly wanted to send their children to Christian schools, that there's an injustice in there and that that injustice violates our Constitution. They filed suit in federal district court, lost in the First Circuit Court of Appeals, but they wouldn't give up. And they brought their case to this, our highest court in the land, the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court heard oral argument in mid-December. And we should be getting a decision from the court in a matter of weeks, for sure, by the end of the court's term, which is when our schools end as well.
How was Carson v. Macon argued before the Supreme Court by both sides?
I think that the lawyers that were representing the family, they've been, they're from the Institute for Justice, and they've been great advocates for school choice in particular. And they were able to, with the support of a number of friends of the court who filed briefs from religious freedom groups, groups like the Alliance Defending Freedom and the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, be able to show that this movement is a movement not only for school choice, but for true school choice, so that parents would be able to choose schools regardless of the religious identity or the religious lens with which the schools were teaching their children, but really the school that was the best fit for their children. Interestingly enough, the state's lawyer made, I think, a number of fumbles in oral argument. I was listening in, as well as many people were listening to oral argument, and at one point said the defining feature of public education in Maine was that it was religiously neutral. And that was something that Justice Clarence Thomas picked up on. He said, you know, it had nothing to do with academic rigor or the search for truth, but a neutrality of, you know, towards religion. And that neutrality in this context really is a hostility. I believe that six of the justices, the more conservative leaning justices, really see this as being discriminatory treatment against religion. Three of the more liberal, left-leaning justices were concerned, I think, improperly at what this would signal as far as the state endorsing religion. But again, this is about parents making the best choices for their children. No one would think that the state is creating a state religion by enabling parents to be those primary educators that we know that we're called to be.
How widely spread are laws like this that restrict state money to religious schools?
So Maine's a little unique because of the uniqueness of Maine's rural communities, but over 31 states in the country have some form of no aid or Blaine Amendment that limits the flow of money to religious schools or religious institutions. A number of years ago, there was a similar issue involving Missouri's state Blaine Amendment, and it was a playground resurfacing program, and a Lutheran preschool that wanted to take advantage of this program was told they couldn't because the preschool was run by the church. The Supreme Court said, no, wait a second. That's discrimination against the First Amendment, and was able to clarify this. This case in Maine is really going to be the continuation and clarification that public money needs to be available to all comers, and we can't put religious schools or religious groups as second-class citizens in the enjoyment of these benefits.
How has the Supreme Court ruled in other school choice cases?
It's very interesting. One of the amicus briefs in some recent Supreme Court cases filed by the Beckett Law had said that in the 1970s, the Supreme Court had a shag carpet understanding of the First Amendment, really stuck in the idea that any kind of collaboration between the government and churches was a problem. We've since understood that that's inconsistent with the founders' understanding of the Free Exercise Clause and the Establishment Clause, that these two religion clauses aren't working against each other, but are working in tandem. And so if we look just recently in the last, let's say, 4 years, the Supreme Court has ruled very clearly, and in some of their cases involving pandemic restrictions, that the government cannot show hostility towards religion, whether it's religious institutions or the exercise of religion, but also that celebrating our rich religious pluralism isn't a problem under the Establishment Clause. So I think that this current Supreme Court is righting the errors that have been wrought in the past. And I'm pretty confident, although I can't read a crystal ball, but I'm pretty confident that in this case involving Maine, it will continue to side for religious freedom and for greater and more true school choice.
If the court rules against the Maine law, what effects would that have in other states?
That is a fantastic question, Todd. It really does depend on the programs that each state has. Now, the Supreme Court is unlikely, and it would be kind of impossible to say that states need to create school choice programs. That's not what this case is about. What it really is about is when you do have a school choice program in place, you can't discriminate based on religion in the distribution of funds or the schools that are able to benefit from that and the parents and their choices. So there are going to be a lot of kind of sky is falling complaints, especially from teachers' unions saying that this is going to force governments or states to fund private schools. That's not what this case is about. It's about when a state does have a program, and more states are starting to be more and more creative with their programs, not just for serving low-income families, which is an incredibly righteous effort, but to create that for middle class, for even families regardless of income, so that their tax dollars can follow their children to the school that's the best fit for them.
Would a favorable ruling in Carson v. Macon affect money going to Christian colleges and universities?
Now, this again is limited to kind of the context of public school. But I do think that it does set an important marker when we think about keeping public benefits open and not limiting them to people that take a secular line. So that we know, for example, our federal financial aid programs are accessible to students even if they choose a Christian college. You know, that's not up for debate, but this case can reaffirm that that's consistent with our principles of fairness and of anti-discrimination principles in general. Whether we get into the issues of funding, for example, seminary studies, I think that's a case for another day. And I do think that it's a case worth looking into, because we know that as a society, our churches provide an important support, especially as a safety net when we've seen in the last few years, and that people can serve in many different ways.
What would you say to someone who is concerned that by taking public money, the result will be that religious schools become dependent on state money and vulnerable to whatever the state may dictate regarding what is taught or not taught?
You know, that's a really, really great concern, because there's always a worry about having strings attached to the purse strings, right? Are you going to be limited? Are there going to be things that are against your principles and your mission? One great resource in the Catholic world, there's a group called Catholic Education Partners, and they've been advancing the cause of school choice within the Catholic community and working with legislatures and lawmakers when they come up with school choice programs to make sure that those strings are not attached, that religious freedom is a part of any program that's created. And I think that we know that from at least some of the recent Supreme Court cases, that when there are strings attached to money that interfere with religious mission, that there are significant religious freedom problems in doing so. But it's definitely, we've got to be wise as serpents in this context, because there is definitely a push to try to indoctrinate children in education, and oftentimes at odds with Christian belief.
Andrea Picciotti-Bear is a director of the Conscience Project. She's a Stanford-educated lawyer, formerly served in the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice, and is author of a recent column for Newsweek titled "The Supreme Court Can End a Century of Anti-Religion Discrimination." You'll find a link to it and to the website for the Conscience Project at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Andrea, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
We will talk about a new Wall Street Journal poll on 15-week abortion bans with Dr. Michael New of the Charlotte Lozier Institute next. You can meet and hear Bill Barr, Albert Mohler, Pavi Rossinen, Chris Roseborough, Brian Wolfmiller, Joel Bierman, and Will Wheaton at the 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 24th and Saturday, June 25th in Chicago. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 24th and 25th at Concordia University, Chicago.
Terry Mattingly is the eternal boomer. In other words, he, due to the circumstances of his birth, is lame.
Here's some feedback from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Terry can be counted on to deliver his boring, blasé take in his irritatingly pseudo-profound fashion. Anyway, lame. May God have mercy on Terry and Issues Etc. You're all a bunch of lame boomers.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Our Christian faith is under constant attack, and we must be proactive in keeping our children in the church. At Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas, we believe that an education rooted in God's Word is one that stands against the very gates of hell. Nothing in this world is more important. Offering a rigorous classical Lutheran education, we provide in-person and live online remote learning opportunities for preschool through grade 12. To learn more, visit flsplano.org, flsplano.org.